Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! Let's go, Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, July 26, 2021, and this is episode 232 of the TortureCast, a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We're coming to you live on Facebook. Sorry, I prematurely pressed a button before, so if you saw that link, that is not the correct link. So if you're here, you're obviously found the correct one. Well, I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today from hot and sunny Las Vegas, as always, is Eric Nathanson. What's up, Eric?
Not hot and sunny at all. It's monsoon season. We've been getting storms the last 2-3 days. It's awesome.
Nice. I just always assume it's perpetually hot down there. It's always hell. But yeah, I guess they're gonna have respite sometimes.
So. Well, we did. We got a relief, but the power was out last night for like 8 hours. So though it was like in the high 70s, it really wasn't as good as it could have been. But it's kind of fun coming from somewhere where I dealt with storms all the time, watching people deal with the storms here. Like, oh my God, flash flooding is a real concern here. You know, people have been rescued right up the street from me twice in the last week.
Yeah.
It's really crazy, but it's kind of fun. It's nice to actually get some break from the heat. How are you doing up in California?
Oh, just fine. Yeah, we've had pretty mild weather. I'd love to schedule a trip to Vegas if I knew it was going to be in the 70s in the summertime. That sounds like a deal, baby. Oh man. In fact, we're planning a little trip in August. So, the kids actually mentioned they wanted to go back to Vegas, and I was like, really? In August?
It's still be hot.
It's still going to be hot, guys. I don't know if we're really going to be able to do stuff outside, but, besides that, the Giants are, well, let's be honest. They've been mediocre since the All-Star break, since we last recorded. They've gone 5-5 in the second half. They still have the best record in the bigs, however, at 62-37, 25 games above 500, and still have a two-game edge over the Dodgers, who also were 5-5 since the break, and I think the Padres are 6-5 since the break. The entire NL West has been 5-5, basically, and the entire National League has been 500 or worse, except for St. Louis, has gone 6-4. So for whatever reason, the entire National League is just trading victories right now, which, to be honest, if the Giants are going to go 5-5, it's fine with us, right? I mean, you know, it's one of those things where the Giants haven't really lost any ground, and we're going to cover a lot about what happened this past week. Some disappointing, some just very dramatic and amazing. The Giants are 2 games up, like I said, on the Dodgers. And what's really good to notice is they're 11 games up on Cincinnati for the wild card should they lose that grip on the NL West. And I think we lost Eric there just for a bit. He was frozen in time. Let's see if he's back.
Can you see me now?
Yes, he's back. We can see him now. I thought he was just reflecting and pondering on my thoughts for a while, but no, that was apparently not it.
No, the internet went wacky. These storms, I wondered if that might happen once or twice. So if it does, my apologies to the podcast and streaming community.
But yeah, the Giants lost 2 of 3 to the Cards are in St. Louis. They won 3 out of 4 in LA, and we'll get to that. That was a saucy, fun, meaty series.
Fun.
My God, that was playoff baseball. And then just recently, they dropped 2 of 3 to the Pirates at home, and there's definitely some concern with some of the performances from some of the Giants there, and we'll get into that. But it seems like the Giants played to their opponent's level over the last 10 games, you know, really played up for the Dodgers and then against the Cardinals and Pirates. It just and I think there was some fear of that maybe coming out of the second half, but certainly after the LA series, sometimes you just go into these games and you think about, well, right after the Pirates, we got the Dodgers again, you know. They just had this really emotional roller coaster of a series, and I don't know, it just seemed to be a letdown against the Pirates. But you know, one thing I can say, though, is that even though the Giants still maintain that 2-game edge over the Dodgers, I was made aware of this fact over the weekend. The Dodgers are only 1-10 in extra inning games this year. That is far below the expectation, right? That is a very odd statistic. So I mean, even if they're, you know, 4-7 in extra inning games, they got a one game lead on the Giants. So, I mean, I don't know what. Thank God for their poor performances in 11 extra inning games.
I mean, how random is that stat, though? Because with the runner starting on second base, I feel like it makes, you know, extra innings a crapshoot. So I'd be curious to see extra innings, how they split it home and away. Because, I mean, a lot of times if the visiting team, you know, scores like 3-4 runs, makes it difficult for the Dodgers to come back as the home team. That happened, I think, the other day against the Rockies.
Right.
So you got to wonder how many of those are at home. And you're right. That's I didn't even think about it in the way you just framed it. 2-3 games in the standings. I didn't even think about it that way. So thank goodness Dave Roberts sucks in extra innings for some reason. Well, you talk about like playing down to the competition. They did that with Pittsburgh and St. Louis, but they don't seem to do that at all the rest of the year. I'm looking at the thing. All the bad teams they've been beating up on.
Oh, yeah, they beat up on Arizona. They beat on Colorado. I mean, definitely it's only a kind of a lately thing, and it's fine. I mean, they can't play, you know, 700 ball the entire season. So this is going to happen. But, you know, there's some concern with some of the performances, and we'll get into that in just a second. So, you know, we don't have to dwell too long on the St. Louis series. That was more than a week ago now. It's kind of distant history. But, you know, they came out of the break, and they looked like they hadn't skipped a beat. They won that first game 7-2. Homers by Yaz, his 14th, and Wade Jr., his 8th. Again, we highlighted this at the break episode. Their batting average with runners in scoring position has just been abysmal. They really do rely on their home runs for scoring right now. In fact, last I checked, they were at 55% of their runs were scored via the home run. And that's fine. I mean, that's great to generate runs like that. There's no doubt about that. But the deficiency in the hitting with runners in scoring position lately, I should say, not overall for the year, lately has been really abysmal. And in that game, they were 2-10 with runners in scoring position. So it does seem to be like homers or nothing. And then the next two games really highlight that fact. They lost 3-1 and 2-1 in successive fashion. In the second game, they were 1-9 with runners in scoring position. And in game three, they were 0-7. So for the series, they were 3-26. Ouch.
That's one or two hits that aren't home runs. That's all you need there is some ball that goes to a gap. Somebody yanks one down the line, even, you know, a single to the outfield when you have a second runners on second and third would have won either of those games pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you lose those games in not heartbreaking fashion, but just frustrating fashion where if you just take one of those, okay, you've won the series, you're moving on. I mean, you know, Disco didn't pitch poorly, 6 innings, 3 runs. Cueto pitched well, and he's been, you know, inconsistent, I would say. You know, he'll pitch well, then he won't, then he won't, then he will. He had 5 innings, only 2 hits, 1 run. But again, the offense was dead that game, only generated 1 run, so no support there. So, you know, it was in St. Louis, and, you know, that's fine. They're still a great baseball team and a great baseball town. And the Giants have always played them very well in the playoffs. They tend to not play against the Cardinals as well during the regular season. They tend to be a thorn in their side, but you know, it is what it is. You're not going to win every series.
Well, I mean, the Cardinals, it always felt like they matched up well against the Giants. And then you throw Arenado and Goldschmidt on their team, and it's like, well, of course, they're going to win some games. Those guys always will show up and have a game, each of them. I think Goldie had one of these games where he drove in 2 of the 3 runs or something. They're always gonna get the Giants. I don't know. For some reason, the Cardinals have that magic, but at least it changes in the postseason. You're right. I don't think we'll be seeing them in the postseason this year, though.
No, it doesn't look like the Cardinals are destined for a wild card, let alone not the central title with the Brewers playing so well this year. Yeah. But then, of course, the highlight, the main card of this podcast was the 4-game series in L.A. And what's incredible is how many games are front-loaded in these first 100, you know, against the Dodgers. In fact, I do believe after the upcoming series at Oracle starting tomorrow night, it's a 3-game series against LA, the Giants and Dodgers only play 6 more times the rest of the year. So, I mean, they're getting the bulk of their action up in the first, you know, 2/3 of the season. So is it only
they
three?
Only play 3 more times. Yeah, they play.
So I was including these three as part of that 6. That's right.
So that's it. There's 6 more games at Oracle.
Yeah. Yeah. 6 more games at Oracle total.
The other one's in the beginning of September.
So it's kind of strange, you know, like you don't have this drama with the Dodgers. I mean, yeah, you do have that 3-game series in September, but you know, they're usually NL West heavy at in the last month, and they are, but just not with the Dodgers. So they're getting it all out of the way right now. The good news is, of course, the Giants won 3 out of 4, and it really helped to not even the season series, but get close. The Giants are now 6-7, I believe, against the Dodgers. So, yeah. You know, coming into this series, they were what, 3-6. So that really helped to kind of even that up. Makes you feel a little bit better about, you know, that competition. But that first game, they handled the Dodgers fairly easily, 7-2, homers by Posey and Flores, which was fantastic. And then you get into just, Eric, I don't even know how to describe the emotions that all Giants and even Dodgers fans must have been feeling for not one game, not two games, three consecutive games of just insane baseball. I mean, if this crap happened in the playoffs, I think people would literally be having heart attacks, you know, and strokes, because that's the way it felt. I mean, and you know, I'd say you and I are more level-headed Giants fans. You know, we get upset about certain things. We'll text back and forth, but, you know, we realize these guys aren't perfect. Mistakes are going to happen. Blown saves are going to happen. It's just going to happen, but you hope it evens out on both sides of the coin. And boy, did it ever in this series, because that game two, the Giants had a commanding 6-1 lead in the fifth, and you're thinking, okay, all right, things are looking good. They might cruise to this victory, kind of like the previous night. But the Dodgers just chipped away, you know, and suddenly it was 6-5 going into the ninth. And it doesn't feel great, but you're still thinking, all right, well, here we go. Let's get the ninth. We got no problems. Rodgers goes out there. And I don't know what happened. It was just, and of course you have the three pitcher or batter minimum, so it didn't matter anyway. But you go walk, and then bomb. And that was it. The game was over in a flash. It was just, it felt surreal to me.
It was kind of Chris Taylor really started that for the Dodgers. I gotta give credit where credit's due. That guy was on freaking fire the entire series.
Yeah, he was,
and he really got them going and got them starting to chip away, because he was involved in two of the three scoring plays that brought them within that one run deficit that Smith then crushed with the end. Rodgers, I'm looking at his game logs right now, and I hate to put it all on Rodgers, and I'm going to, because I'm also going to put it on Kapler, because Rodgers, that was only his second time pitching against the Dodgers this year. So his first time was that game, if you remember, that Mike Tauchman robbed Albert Pujols of a home run after Rodgers had thrown the save and the Dodgers had tied the game.
Exactly. For some reason, he was on the hook for the loss if he hadn't, snagged it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That game was, he would have blown, what was it, like a 3-run lead or something like that at that point? What is that, 3 runs? Yeah, it was a 3-run lead he blew. And, you know, that was the thing, bringing Rodgers back into a 1-run game. And I get it. I just don't feel, this is why I put on Kapler a little bit. I just don't feel that Rodgers matches up well against the Dodgers. Throw him in the seventh or the eighth inning if you want to, but the Dodgers, they're really strong at waiting out on pitches and laying off pitches out of the zone. They're a Zaidi-built ball club, so they're really good at being patient. You know, you're not going to get Max Muncy to swing at that ball that rises and shoots out of the zone, because he already knows it. He's going to lay off it. He's an example because he's got a great strike zone recognition.
Right.
But, you know, so I hated the move to go with Rodgers there. I would have just gone to McGee. McGee seemed to have been the closer. We talked about this, I think, on the last show, or at least the show before that, and we talked about it in texts, that it seems like McGee has been the go-to closer. So I just don't understand the thinking to suddenly go to Rodgers there in that situation. Why not let McGee roll for another inning? Because when he came out in the eighth, he went bing, bang, boom. I think he only threw like 10 pitches or something like that. Why not let him keep going? Why did he choose to go that route? And I appreciate Kapler for saying, I'll throw him back out there the next night. And he did, to all his credit. And Rodgers absolutely finally came through against the Dodgers. But that's kind of why I was so upset with Kapler, and still kind of am upset with Kapler about that move. Like, why did you mix up the bullpen? And this comes down to, as we'll talk about when trades down the line, this comes down to not having a single closer. And so that's why I almost put it on the manager more than the player, because the manager made the wrong decision and chose the wrong guy to perform. But, I mean, if Rodgers shuts them down and they win that game, we're not saying a peep.
It's true. And, you know, what was concerning going in, and look, one bad outing does not make a trend, right? No. I get that. So, you know, he had just very little history against the Dodgers, and obviously he didn't do well. He didn't do well this time either. He goes, you know, walk bomb. So he doesn't even retire a batter, right?
He wasn't even close to the zone that day. No. Like the three batter rule really screwed them. I mean, I think they would have yanked him earlier in any other year.
Well, in the post game conference, Gabe Kapler even talked about the fact that he didn't look good. He was missing his spots in the bullpen. Like he was aware of it before he went in. So it kind of adds to that fact of. Okay, well, I know he had already used McGee in the eighth, and so he wasn't going to rely on McGee going again in the ninth. I mean, I know he could have physically, but that's not how these guys roll, right? But it was concerning because he does seem to flip-flop the relievers. You know, he'll go a couple, 3 weeks with one guy going in the eighth, the other one going in the ninth, and then he'll just flip it. And I haven't heard exactly why he's made those changes, and he did it again in this series and others. But yeah, Rogers coming in, it just ended up not being the best move in the world. He ended up, walking to giving up the bomb. And then after the game and the postgame presser, Gabe Kapler actually talked about, before I address anything, the first thing I want to say is I can't wait to get Rogers back out on the mound. I mean, right away, he was already standing up for his guy. I think we lost... Eric, so he'll come back here in a bit. But just to review, I think he's going to come back in with a link. He's having some internet issues right now. But just to review, Tyler Rogers, I mean, overall, he's been a fantastic reliever for the Giants. But against the Dodgers, just specifically the Dodgers, you're talking about 3 games, 2 innings pitched. He's given up 4 hits and 6 earned runs, right? 2 walks and 2 bombs. And then almost another bomb that Tauchman, of course, went out and grabbed. And yeah, Dustin, he's making a comment here saying that's what a good manager does. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, at the time, you know, I was a little scared about bringing in Rogers the next night. Here we go. We have Eric coming back in. Eric, just if you missed, I was talking about Tyler Rogers and, of course, his struggle against the Dodgers. Just reviewed some of his stats. But the fact that Gabe Kapler, right after in the postgame conference, I mean, the first thing he said is, before I address anyone, I want to first say that I cannot wait to get Rogers back out there on the mound. And, you know, a lot of us were like, I get what he's doing, he's saying, but is it really, first of all, is he just saying that, right? Like, because the next night has to happen in order for him to put him in that situation. And then number two, there are just certain teams that have players' numbers, right? It's called ownage. And it just seemed like the Dodgers have ownage on Tyler Rogers. Granted, small sample size, but it just seemed like every time he goes out against the Dodgers, he gets hit hard, right? Even the robbed home run. So it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's nice of you to say, Gabe. Let's see if that really happens. Well, it did, right? So the Giants go ahead and lose that one 8-6. And then the very next night, they're down 2-1. And let me put this up here. They're down 2-1, and of course, the Dodger favorite closer, I say that lovingly, wow. Kenley Jansen is out on the mound. Buster Posey comes out, pinch hits, gets a single, and then Wilmer Flores, as I bring up the highlight here, steps up to the plate, and then this happens. We don't have audio, do we?
Very good.
I hear it.
Oh, you do, huh? That's interesting. All right, let me just check my settings real quick.
Make and sure. Again, sorry to everybody. My internet apparently is spotty still from the storm. So nothing good I can do old, about that.
Good old stuff here.
Yeah, I'm right near the router and all that jazz, so it's, you know, I'm not...
StreamYard. Okay. All right, well, it says it's working, so I'm going to go ahead and let go. I don't know if it's getting recorded.
With plays on the field. It's very good on the field.
I mean, not really.
That ball is hit.
But if this isn't coming in on the audio podcast,
field.
Of course,
it's on its way. Adios, Pelota.
There with one out.
What a moment.
They take the lead 3-2. They add another
for
one
Wilmer Flores.
On. And then what does Gabe Kapler do? He stays behind his word.
Against Kenley
and
Jansen.
Immediately saw Rogers warming up
and
in the
look
bullpen.
At the location right out over the plate.
And it was just this moment of like, oh my God, he's really going to do this. And part of me understood why he was doing it. There's no doubt about it. But on the other hand, I said, man, to myself, I said, this is a big risk, right? The reward is that he stood behind his man, stood behind his word, and the players are going to respect him for it. But man, the opposite side could be much worse, to be honest. If he blows a second consecutive save, then everyone's going to be on him like, you know, flies on shit.
And not only did he go out there, Rodgers, I mean, oh, what an inning. Did you see the dugout react? Like, it was almost like they kind of had a feeling that they had a chance to get – I mean, Buster starting that inning off with a single to right against Kenley. I mean, he's the guy on the team who's seen Jansen the most out of anybody. And then Wilmer, not having a good history against Kenley, he was hunting, and he hit a homer on the highest cutter ever of somebody off of Kenley Jansen. It was that high up in the zone. Nobody had ever homered on a cutter that high in the zone before. And then to bring Rodgers back out with a two-run lead, granted, and Will Smith is the first batter he's facing, the guy who just got him for a bomb the night before. And in 10 pitches, Rodgers was done with the inning. It was like no big deal. And
I know, isn't that insane?
Baseball is just so – it's so nice that you can turn the page on the next day. You know, we were all angry Tuesday night of last week when – Rodgers lost that first game, couldn't hit his spots and do anything, and then to come away with that like last second victory on Wednesday like this, it was just unbelievable, and it was just the beginning of thrilling finishes to the Giants Dodgers games. And I think the stat I saw was this was the first Giants Dodgers series in the history of the series where they both took a lead in the ninth inning with a home run in back to back games.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Wouldn't doubt that at all. And so Kenley Jansen, of course, gets booed off, right, the mound, and Dodger fans are notorious for that. And then the next night, I can't believe it, Dave Roberts basically took a page out of Kapler's book.
Yeah, he gave another chance.
Gave Jansen another chance, just like Rodgers was given another chance, and L.A. is leading the game 3-1. And here comes Jansen, and he ends up loading the bases, and I have some highlights here, and I hope this plays, and I do apologize if there's audio issues. This is kind of the series of events that led to the Giants winning again, and Kenley Jansen not only blowing the save, but getting booed once again. So here we are in the top of the ninth with the bases loaded and two outs, and here we go.
Bases loaded, two down, two ninth outs. Inning, 1-1.
Estrada on the ground. So we have Estrada hitting this grounder, and originally it's a forced play on Vossler, who walked prior to that. And of course, the umpire calls him out. And can you hear it, by the way, Eric?
Yes,
close. Really close.
I'm just having issues on my end. That's okay, as long as you guys can hear it. But upon further review, Vossler hustled his butt down there and ended up being safe. It was just absolutely incredible. So that ball was overturned, and it continued the game.
What a play by Vossler. They all touted his secondary lead and getting a good jump on this ball as the reason why the Giants won this game.
I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, like, if it was like, you know, an Alex Dickerson, you know, on first base or something, he would have been out by 3 feet. Then you have Darren Ruff, of course, whom there was a controversy for as far as Dodger fans are concerned right there on the check swing. As you can see the slow-mo, he went.
He totally went, but he never should have been in that position. The 2-0 pitch was like a foot outside.
Exactly. So you have that only developing because the umpire missed a horrific strike call prior to that on 2-0. So it's kind of like it evened out. So he walks in the tying run. And then here we go, Lamont Wade Jr., who's been hot as hell lately, ropes one to right field, right in front of the diving right fielder, with two outs, of course, runners are going, scores two, and then it caps off the scoring for the night. Now, Rodgers did not go back out for the ninth for the third consecutive night, but Jake McGee did, and got the save. So, just incredible. Just the drama from this series was just so much fun. Then, you know, I don't have the highlights playing again, but Jansen is just... man, that's great. Yeah, sorry, Dustin. I see that some you had some trouble hearing us over the audio of the game. I tried to turn that down a little bit. I couldn't monitor it.
We're going to rename this episode Technical Difficulties.
I'd say about one out of, 10, we usually end up having running into a wall of tech difficulties. So, but, you know,
between my internet and the sound issues, yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, all right. Well, I won't have any more highlights to play, so we'll just go along with
that. Well, because there's no more highlights for the friggin' Giants.
There's no more highlights for the Giants.
Chance, exactly. In that ninth inning, that series of events, and I actually didn't expect to see it. I was falling asleep, and somebody delivered food to the wrong door, knocked on my door, and woke me up right before the ninth inning. And so I was able to watch all that unfold. I was so happy that I was woken up. I wasn't even angry at the guy. But that ninth inning between Ruff, I mean, everything with two outs, Solano driving the ball, like Donnie doesn't feel like he's doing a damn thing. And then every now and then he does something like that, hits the ball to the wall and gets on base and continue, you know, gets the line moving. And then that play at second base, it was just, it proved to be so pivotal. So yeah. It was the only reason Ed Hickox, the first base umpire, was able to say, no, he didn't go. And I'm going to love Ed Hickox forever. I personally, Ed Hickox, actually, quick side note, Ed Hickox is an umpire who also is a cop. And when I was in umpire school, he pulled us over one night when we were out because he was riding up and down A1A in his Daytona cop car. And he pulled us over because he knew it was us and like tried to scare the crap out of us and stuff like that. So he was already near and dear to my heart. But for calling Darren Ruff's call safe there and saying he didn't go, I mean, Ed Hickox, you deserve a plaque on the Wall of Fame for the Giants if they win it all this year.
Yeah, you could go send him a box of chocolates or something, man.
Right, absolutely. We appreciate it. I mean, he stood there. I mean, Roberts went nuts. I don't even think Roberts got kicked out, and I get it because the Giants gave him some latitude. As long as he didn't say, you're horrible, they'd let him scream for a minute and then go back to the dugout.
Yeah, yeah. So just pivotal plays, one after another for those three consecutive games. And just to see the lead flip and blown saves in three consecutive games, I don't recall ever seeing that, ever in my life with the Giants. I mean, that is just insane.
Those are the games they lose. They lose the teams the way they won that game. Generally, you know, do, what I mean? Right?
And, you know, losing that first one, you know, you're thinking, oh, my God, this is it, right? This is how this run starts, this precipitous drop off. Now the Dodgers have the momentum, and then the next night, you know, they're down and you're thinking, that's it, this is gonna be it. And then they come back and you're like, all right, tit for tat, you know, they swapped them, maybe they can just, you know, win the next game. Same thing, down 3-1 in the ninth, and you're like, oh crap, all right, well, you know, split's better than nothing, you know, we'll take it, split on the road. And then the magic happened there with, you know, the bad calls kind of getting rebutted back with Hickox on the this check swing. And then just the clutch base running by Vossler, the clutch hits by Solano and Wade, and the walk by Ruff. And it's just, it needed all those things to happen because most of that happened with two outs. So,
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I mean, I'm sure Dodger fans, you know, in the alternate universe or their fan podcast, they're lamenting all of these things going, God damn it, if just this one thing had gone right, we would have won the game. It's like, I feel him. I feel him. I do. But, you know, it went in the Giants' favor this time. So it's fantastic.
I mean, the fascinating thing here is looking back on it, is it was really all with two outs. The double I mentioned by Solano was the first batter and hit with two outs in the inning. So everything else happened after that. And I've never seen Jansen boot off the mound like that. Dodgers fans, I mean, he's done so much for you. I don't get it. You know, the guy had a bad couple days.
Yeah, but, you know, I know there weren't, you know, as many Giants fans in the stands. But, and again, it's social media. We all understand social media is not an echo chamber, but a soapbox for people to take hot takes or to just be trolls, just to elicit a reaction, right? Not calm and concerted and thoughtful remarks that may or may not get a lot of comments, but it's the absurd comments that either people are genuinely behind or just want to have a bunch of responses. But I mean, you know, you saw on all the sites, you know, Tyler Rogers should be DFA'd. Tyler Rogers should be this. Tyler Rogers should be that. There's no excuse in this. He should be off the team. And you're just thinking, like, the dude has like a 2 ERA. Like, he's been, he should have been on the All-Star team. And yeah, he had a bad game. Okay, don't you have a bad day at work? I mean, shit happens. They're not perfect human beings. It's like, okay, if a trend starts where he's blowing, you know, 4 out of 6 or something like that, then we got cause for concern. But, you know, these things happen. And he showed his mettle, and Kapler showed his trust in his player by sending him right back out. And what did he do? 1, 2, 3. Didn't have any drama. Nothing. Perfect. So it was great.
I mean, the Giants could have walked away from that series still 2 games ahead, which they are right now. But to come out 3 games ahead instead, to gain a game out of that series was so unexpected. I mean, after losing Tuesday night's game, facing 2 more games, especially one with Walker Buehler starting, There's no way Giants fans thought that they'd get out of there with a 3-1 series victory. And, yeah. and it was a very – it was a playoff atmosphere. It was so fun to see just – they were the center of the baseball world for a couple of days. It really felt like that because, like, all the social media stuff was them, you know, by that time of night because it was the only game, you know, really in town at that point. I mean, they have the two best records in baseball. At least they did when that series started. So how can that not be exciting? And, you know, it just shows. It was so funny. I saw a tweet. I think it was my friend Christy Cagle. She said, you know, Padres fans getting all excited that all their series are good with the Giants. You know, sit down. We've been doing this for years, Giants and Dodgers. Like, that was just a chapter. That wasn't the beginning of anything. That was just a chapter. That was just part of a long, long saga.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Padres fans getting all excited and it's like, wait a minute.
No, you know? No. Still Giants Dodgers. Let's keep it where it should.
This is the real rivalry, and that series proved it. But then the Giants fly back home, and of course they hadn't played a home game since before the break, and they play the Pittsburgh Pirates. They have the second worst record in the National League. And they just, to be honest, they just laid eggs. You know, what are you gonna do? They lost the first game 6-4. They had a 3-3 tie game in the seventh, and the Pirates ended up scoring three with no hits, zero hits. So it was a combination of walks, fielder's choices with errors. It was just bad. It was a bad thing. So
The Wade error that gave up the two runs was really the killer when he bobbled the ball or threw. Well, because when he totally misplayed it. I love Wade in the lineup, and we'll mention him with Who's Hot because he is red hot. But I'd love to see him in the outfield again and Brandon Belt at first. Wade's very serviceable, but he is – I think Darren Ruff's even a little better than he is at first base. Wade seems to panic every now and then and not know how to make the right play at first. And it really cost the Giants in that game, like, because they did. They came out flat, but they ended up tying the game. So you're like, oh, okay, they got a shot. You know, maybe the Giants aren't, you know, having a letdown game. And then they had the letdown game because they came back in the ninth inning. They had a nice little fake rally that didn't really do enough.
No, yeah, they ended up scoring a run in the ninth there. And a lot of people were going, like, see, if he hadn't made that error, they would have tied the game. Well, yeah, butterfly effect. We don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. Lamont Wade is serviceable at first base, but he's shown a lot of flaws. That was a big one that cost two runs. But he's even had small ones, like I recall just before the break. I don't believe it ended up costing them a run. Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't an error because it was a double play ball. And on the so they're out at second, and they threw back to first, and the ball was above the ground in the air, and it just hit his pocket and fell out. And, you know, he doesn't get credit for an error or get penalized with an error, but, you know, the runner would have been out by a full step. And it's just one of those plays where you're like, how does a first baseman drop it? Like, it wasn't a scoop. It wasn't, you know, an insanely hard catch. It was just a little bit of a stretch, and it was about a foot off the ground, and he just dropped it. So there's been instances like that where, yeah, you're kind of questioning his defense a little bit. He's flashed the leather a little bit in the outfield, though. He's made a couple of diving catches and a couple of good throws, but man, you know, the Giants love his bat, right? And I mean, you know, he's got 10 bombs now.
See
and
why,
we'll get to what he did yesterday, but so they go out and think, okay, well, game two, they got Gausman going. Everything will be fine. They'll right the ship. No problem. I don't know what's going on. I'm not a sports psychologist, but ever since he went on emergency family leave to take care, and I don't know all the medical issues, nor have I think they've revealed anything. But I don't know. I don't know if there's been extra stress at home because of the complicated birth of his kid or what have you. But since he's come back from medical leave, he's had two real bad stinkers, including this one. He went 4 1/3, gave up 8 hits, 6 earned runs. His ERA, which was microscopic before, has actually risen up to 2.21. And in his last 7 1/3, basically both starts after the break and after his medical leave, he's given up 8 earned runs. His batting average against is .355. That's not BABIP. That's batting average against. And his on-base percentage that he's given up, .475. Almost half the batters have safely reached base against him. This is not Kevin Gausman. This is weird. I'm hoping he's just missing his spots because something mentally is going on and he'll be fine going forward, but he hasn't really shown any cracks in the armor most of the year, and now it's been two consecutive starts. So, and it just seems to be I don't think it's coincidental that it's right after, you know, these medical issues and the birth of his kid.
I mean, you wonder if it is the concentration effect. And here's the problem is I'd love for us to sit here and say, don't worry, the old Gausman will be back. And, you know, he'll regain his form. He'll find, you know, all the he says it's a mechanical issue he needs to fix. So that was him trying to stem those kind of rumors.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have no context. We really don't. Gausman's only been with the club for a year and a half now at this point. And we have no idea if he'll be able to bounce back and be the pitcher he was earlier this year, or if he'll regress towards a mean that, you know, he was going to go to eventually anyways. So it's really tough to know what's going to happen with Gausman. I'm really curious to see how he pitches this next couple more times out. He was in the lead for Cy Young with DeGrom going down. He was totally in the lead for Cy Young, and then he went out and he had these two games, and especially against the Dodgers, he struggled. He really, any team that waits him out, if he's not getting that splitter, anybody to chase that splitter, he's not getting outs.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be what his biggest problem was, is he wasn't getting people to chase and he wasn't locating his fastball enough to get strike calls. So we have no context to see if Gausman will come back and be better. I don't know, Chad, do we worry about him or do we think, I mean, I do think he'll bounce back. I think Gausman's going to be okay, but truly we have no context.
We don't have the context, and I think he will be okay. This is just two starts. It's just, a blip. It's not quite yet a trend. You know, I'm going to give it at least three more starts to see, you know, if you get a 5 or 6 start sample, then there's something going on. And if it's mechanical, well, then he needs to fix it. If it's mental because, you know, he's got a lot of stress at home with the family, it's understandable, right? I mean, I've had 2 kids. It's a very stressful time in your life. It's emotional. It's stressful. I know he's not, you know, up at 3 a.m. feeding the baby or anything like that. But, you know, there's a lot of stress, a lot of family dynamics going on that we just are not privy to. And so that could be affecting him as well. We're all human. He's human. Yeah. So I say, you know, let's give him some time. Maybe he needs to adapt to that life. Maybe he does need to fix a mechanical issue. Maybe it's a little bit of both. But obviously, you know, no one's overly concerned at this point. We'll just see how he bounces back in the next couple of starts. But they ended up losing that game 10-2. Of course, Tauchman went in to be a mercy pitcher in the 9th, gave up a run. So his perfect ERA is now gone. Sorry, Tauchman.
Yeah, right. And you know who else? Well, it's funny because I'm looking at it and I clicked on his name in this game. And this is a game Brevia happened to not give up anything. But that poor guy has been getting slaughtered these last few games.
He has,
You're talking about batting average again. His is .364 since the All-Star break in the 4 games. He's given up hits to 8 of 23 batters. So that's 1 every 3 batters he's given a hit up to. So it's so funny that they decided to finally rest the bullpen arms, because Brebbia has been the guy that they've been really hyping the load on, kind of like, okay, you clean up every day. And they finally had to give up and be like, here, Tauchman, give it a shot.
Yeah, just give it a shot. We're going to lose this game anyway. It's 9-2.
Yeah.
And then they go into the 3rd game. Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. I don't know why. It's you only gave up 1 run, but it seems to be.
Yeah, but you're not coming back from down 7. I mean, I know they've come back before, but you know what I mean? I don't mind that move. You're a better team. Focus on the next day, which.
Yeah, just focus on the next day. Save an inning from your bullpen, I guess. Whatever.
Right.
So next game, you're thinking, I can't believe the Giants are in a position of needing to win to not be swept by the Pittsburgh Pirates at home, nonetheless. But here they are, right? Alex Wood, of course, goes out there. And, you know, he allowed a run right in the first inning. And I was like, oh, boy, here we go again. Giants already down to the lowly Pirates. But that was it. That was all that the staff allowed. Lamont Wade Jr., who's been hot, 2 bombs in the game, 3 for 5 overall. Tyro Estrada, 2 for 4. So the offense clicked a little bit, and they ended up plating 6 runs and won that game fairly easily, 6-1 to salvage that game. So, you know, they're 5-5 since the break. Not great, not horrible, just kind of, you know, holding serve. And with the Dodgers also going 5-5, they haven't lost any ground. So thank God they won those 3 out of 4. But and then, like I said at the top of the show, if you're looking at, you know, potentially the Dodgers overtaking them in the NL West, which, you know, I hope they don't, they have a comfortable 11-game lead on the Reds, you know, with what? We have 63 games to play. So, you know, you start doing the math, and I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse at all, but it's going to take an incredible dive by the Giants combined with a meteoric rise by either the Reds or the Phillies, who are even further back, to catch them for a playoff spot. I mean, so at this point, you know, you see those playoff, you know, chances at 97, 98, 99%. I mean, that's, I think, where you do have to put it. I mean, and you run this scenario over and over and over again, and the Giants are destined for at least one playoff game. And you know, it gets me excited and it gets me nervous, Eric. I am a wreck. I am an absolute wreck during the playoffs. I mean, I'm a wreck. I was a wreck during the LA series, and that's not even playoffs. Like, I don't know how I'm going to handle it, whether it's a wild card or NLDS. I'm going to be a wreck.
I hope they hold on for the NLDS so bad. God, I hope they win the division. I mean, innings like, I wanted to highlight, Alex Wood pitched well, but he got pulled with the bases loaded and one out. And Jay Jackson came in, got a double play just like that. It was like no big deal. I mean, it wasn't like that. It was five pitches, but still it was no big deal. And he's been phenomenal. He's been what they thought Matt Whistler would be so far, yeah. I think. He's been really good in those situations when he needs to just come in and pound his slider. And I think seeing things like that come together, and that's why I mentioned like Brebbia's been getting workload, because I think they're going to get rid of him soon. You know, with 63 games to go, having an 11-game lead, I mean, you have to lose games fast to fall down the rankings there. So, I mean, if the Giants can hold on, it's crazy that the three best teams in the National League are all in the same division. It's going to go a long way, though. Winning 3 out of 4 against the Dodgers was huge. And I also think bouncing back and winning yesterday was huge, because if they had gotten swept by the friggin' Pirates after taking 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, it like wouldn't have mattered. It just wouldn't have mattered. They'd be a one-game lead. They'd be worried about heading into the Dodgers season. At least now, if they win on Tuesday and jump back to a 3-game lead, again, they know they're in first place when L.A. leaves town. And I think that's the goal that they have set forward. And as long as they keep churning out that goal, and as long as they keep winning 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5, really, is what they need to keep on pace the rest of the season, they should be all right. They, again, though, the Giants, they lost 2 of the Pirates, but they still do not deal with prolonged losing streaks. They still haven't lost more than, what, 4 in a row, and that was once.
4 in a row is their max, and 5 in a row has been their longest winning streak, and they've done that now 3 or 4 individual times. So they are a team of consistency. They don't get into long ruts either way. Which I think is good, because it does allow this team to just keep level-headed. And like you said, I mean, yeah, it sucks losing 2 out of 3 to the Cardinals coming out of the break, and then 2 out of 3 to the Pirates. But they won 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers. The Dodgers have been struggling. The Padres have been struggling. The whole National League has been struggling since the All-Star break at 5-5 or thereabouts. And so you just go, okay, and you just push that behind you. You don't say what ifs and how ifs and all that stuff. And you just go, as of right now, we have 63 games left. And we have a 2-game lead in the National League West and the best record in all of baseball. Let's go. You know, you just don't look behind you. And you're right. Focus series by series at a time, because they got a gauntlet coming up here in these 6 games. Granted, they're all at home, but, you know, they got 3 against L.A. So like you said, it'd be great if they could take 2 out of 3. They increase their lead to 3. Even if they lost 2 out of 3, they still got a 1-game lead coming out. But then the Houston Astros come into town, and they're just – They scare me a little bit. I know the Giants have a better record than them. Don't get me wrong, but they're just a team that can wreck others. They've got the highest score differential in the major leagues, I believe, right now. And
yeah, the top three run differential teams will all be at Oracle this week.
Yeah, good point. That's a really good point to make. Yeah, because Dodgers obviously have outscored their opponents more than the Giants have by something like 20 runs or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So, but yeah, back to Jay Jackson. I mean, he's a guy that I didn't really know much about. And, you know, he had a cup of coffee with the Padres in 2015. Only 4 1/3 innings, struck out 4, gave up 3 earned runs. Then he got another shot in 2019, 4 years later with Milwaukee. He had a more substantial role, 30 innings pitched, struck out 47 in 30 1/3. Jesus. I mean, that's mowing, right? But he gave up a lot of walks, 18 walks, and then you add that with the 22 hits, and his ERA was 4.45. So he put runners on base, but struck him out like crazy. And now this year so far, he was just mowing down the minor leagues. I mean, his stats were stellar, and they finally said, okay, yeah, I think you're right, kind of like a Matt Whistler type. 6 innings, no hits so far, only 1 walk. And he struck out 9 in 6 innings.
He's faced the minimum 18 batters, too.
Yeah, because the double play. So I think he's at 2, right? He got called in for 1, and he's gotten another one off the walk. So, yeah, he's faced the minimum. He's near perfect. He's near perfect right now. So don't expect him to come out and throw zeros every single time. He's going to have a hiccup at some point.
You know, but with the way this
been great. Yeah.
Well, the way he's both 30, have been churning.
He's not a young guy. He's 33, guys. He's 33. So he's not a spring chicken, you know? It's pretty cool to see this, right? He's getting this is only his third time around in the major leagues, and he's 33. So I think he's definitely making his impact felt. So it's great to see. The Giants love it.
These are the guys Farhan finds. And he does. As we head into this week, this busy week of baseball with rumors and all sorts of misinformation and stuff, it really highlights Farhan again. And these are the kind of moves he makes and brings in players that can contribute at all times. I mean, Wade is another one we've talked about a ton today that, you know, how the hell did Farhan, if I'm the Twins, and we're going to talk about some trade possibilities, but if I'm the Twins, I will never answer the phone if Farhan calls, because everybody that he's traded for the Twins turns into something good. I mean, Sean Anderson is already in Texas, and that's who they traded for Lamont. So it's just absolutely, you know, the fact that Rogers' brother is out there, Berrios is out there on the Twins, I'd be shocked if the Twins were to answer the phone if Farhan calls.
I know. Like, who is that? Who's this call guy? Oh, my God. Nope. Don't answer it. He's just going to fleece us again. No, I know. It's crazy. So I guess we should go ahead and get into it. Trade deadline is 4 days away, guys, July 30th. And obviously the Giants haven't pulled anything yet. There haven't been any major trades except for one. The Padres did acquire Adam Frazier from the Pirates, whom the Giants just played. And Adam Frazier is like leading the league in hits. He's just like this little mosquito. And the Giants just can't get him out. He's just... he's a great little ball player. So the Padres definitely shored up some of their offense there. So kudos to the Padres. They traded away three minor leaguers. I won't repeat their names right now. But look, you know, the Giants have the best record in baseball. I think they're in a position that maybe other than Farhan himself. Because I'm sorry, you cannot tell me that, you know, there might be one or two Giants who are just like so into the team chemistry and we could win it all, that kind of thing. There's no way this team overall thought they would be in this position. Could they fight for a playoff spot? Sure. Maybe a lot of them thought that. But to have the best record after 100 games, I'm sorry. I don't think anyone was thinking that. So I think we have to ask ourselves, Farhan has done an incredible job so far. This whole plan is really for 2022, 23, 24. They're ahead of schedule. They're way ahead of schedule. And everything looks really rosy in terms of these prospects coming up in the next few years with your Bart and Ramos and those kind of guys. So the question is, do they go out and get a closer like a Craig Kimbrel, right? Do they get another power guy, even though they lead the league in home runs, like a Joey Gallo or someone who's flexible? Eric's nodding his head. Or someone with the flexibility with power and a little bit of average, and a Chris Bryant who can play the corners and the outfield, and he loves to do it. Another outfielder with, another rumor is Sterling Marte, right, from the Marlins. Or do they go and shore up their bullpen? Besides a closer, they go and get Tyler Rogers' twin brother, Taylor, who was an all-star this year. These are all possibilities. I think, again, like referring to my question, do they sell part of the farm for rental? And my initial reaction is we're dealing with Farhan Zaidi, and he has not shown tendencies to do this kind of thing. So I highly doubt that he's going to pull the trigger on something like this. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, I think the flip side of that thought is if Farhan does trade away one of the like top 10 prospects, somebody like a Bart, just as an example, because he seems to be the name floated the most at the moment, you almost would have to trust Farhan's ability to analyze his own team. I mean, that's one of the strengths that a good GM has, is scouting his own team. And so if he feels that Bart is expendable enough to get somebody, maybe that's because he sees better talent somewhere else in Bailey or even Genovis down the line. And I don't want to go too deep in the woods on this because we don't know enough about the minor leagues. But, you know, that's just the flip side thought, is that if Farhan does make a good trade or a big trade, it's because he sees that somebody is not necessarily going to jibe with the way he wants to do business. And Bart, the reason Bart is the biggest name is because he didn't draft him. He drafted Bailey when he came in. Bart was drafted in the regime right before Zaidi, and that's why he's the name that's thrown out there as much. And the reason you don't trade Trump is you need a backup catcher. If Casale goes down, you bring Trump up. You don't bring Bart up because then he comes and sits on the bench. If he plays in Sacramento, he hits every day. If you bring Trump up, he hits once every two, three games instead. So to answer your question, Dustin, that's why you don't trade Trump. But, you know, so you look at the self-reflective there. I think Farhan will do something. I'm totally okay with trading prospects right now. I really am. I feel like there's a reason you have so many. I can't pick specific names of guys I'd be willing to get rid of because I don't know them enough. But I do think it's okay if they get rid of one or two top 10 prospects, as long as they get back somebody like a Bryant, a Kimbrel, a Gallo, a Marte, and not somebody like Asdrubal Cabrera.
Yeah, I do like the prospect of getting, you know, it's funny, I don't have his stats right up right now, but, you know, Kimbrel's having a hell of a year this year. There's no question about that. But he's had some really shaky years, guys. I mean, it's not like he's a Mariano Rivera. Well, who is, right? But, you know, I don't know. I mean, selling the farm to get a guy like Kimbrel when, you know, the two-headed closer by committee hasn't been perfect, but it's been serviceable. Again, when you get into the playoffs, which it looks like the Giants will be in at least one game, right? That's a situation where do you want Tyler Rogers closing a wild card game with a one-run lead?
That's where you want to make that decision to Gabe, or do you just want to have a guy that you know you're going to go to? That's where Kimbrel does come into play. That's where Brad Hand, I guess, if you want to throw somebody else out there to close games. Like, do you want to leave that decision up to Kapler and be like, should I go with Rogers today or should I go with McGee?
Yeah. What's the flavor of the day? What are the splits with who's coming up? Yeah, no, I agree. And Berrios is up there too. Steve is.
Yeah, I'd love Berrios. The Giants need some starting pitching. Like, you know, that's the question. Okay. So the question is, in general, do we need to be active? Do the Giants need to be active this week? And I think, quite frankly, their position players, they're doing all right. They're lining up to get Longoria back. They're lining up to get LaStella back. Estrada has shown great depth. So they don't need a backup shortstop like they might have needed a month ago when Dubon wasn't performing. So, like, they don't necessarily need to go out and get any bats. So I think pitching is the area that they need to focus on. I mean, do you agree with that assessment? Do you want to see them go after somebody like a Berrios, you know, and shore up that starting pitching? Or do they, you know, Kyle Gibson's another name that's been thrown out there. I mean, do the Giants have to go for a top-of-the-rotation start, or are they good just going to get, like, a number three or a number four?
Right. Yeah. I do think they need a little bit more pitching depth for sure. I think, you know, middle relief is something that Farhan has been so key and filling in with guys that do so well. We just talked about Jay Jackson and what have you. Right. I know some people have talked about outfield depth. I think that could help overall. The Giants are still doing quite incredible with, you know, I was going to get to this in a bit, but eight Giants now have hit 10 home runs. Two more are at nine, Longo and Slater. I mean, they have a chance now of have 10 guys hitting 10 or more home runs. That's incredible. So they've proven the depth and flexibility of many of their position players to the point where, you know, you miss Longo for 2 months and you're like, who? You know, like, it's not been an amazingly glaring hole. You're missing Belt for a while. Who? You got Wade stepping in and hitting bombs. So, you know, the outfield depth to me isn't as crucial, especially since they lead the league in home runs at this point. I don't think they can solve the clutch hitting with one person. Unfortunately, that's a team effort, right? You know, you go 2-for-12 or 0-for-7 or 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. That's not one guy. That's the entire team. And then, yeah, closer. So I do see Farhan pulling some strings. I think it's going to be a very mid-level type of move. I think it's going to be something that is a little bit under the radar, where I think a lot of Giants fans are going to go, who did they get and who did they give up? I don't even know these guys, you know, or barely know these guys. I don't think it's going to be a Chris Bryant or Kimbrel or Rogers or Gallo or anything like that. I just don't. Again, unless Farhan just has his way of doing the shell game, you know, where it's not like a star for three prospects, like a straight up trade where it's going to be like, okay, well, we'll trade you a future draft pick, you know, this six pack of Budweiser, and, you know, we'll trade with three other teams in the meantime, and you can borrow my BMW for a week. It'll be like some complex trade where maybe Farhan can kind of see the future and realize that he has a good chance of coming out well in this trade, not just for the short duration of a rental, which is the situation I don't want to see. I don't want to see the giving up so much for a rental, because so often, you know, not too many. How many teams win the World Series every year? One, right? All those other teams that even the ones that went deep in the playoffs, a lot of them make these trades. They get these short-term rentals. They give up all of their prospects, and then boom, that's it. They're done. And the Giants are building for the future. So I'm not saying don't go for it now, but I think you just got to be cautious in what you give up.
I got to tell you, that just the more I'm sitting here, the more I'm thinking, the most under the radar but big move that seems to be possible is somehow getting Chris Bryant. You've got Scott Harris's ties to the Cubs, as that's the organization he came from. You have Chris Bryant, who is pretty much a three true outcome guy a lot of the time. He's a walk, strikeout, homer kind of guy, but he's so versatile that he's Farhan's kind of guy. So I don't know. I'm not making a prediction, but I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked if somehow Chris Bryant is a Giant, if he is somehow a Giant this week sometime. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be thrilled because I love Chris Bryant. And that's the kind of rental you're talking about. We all flash back to Carlos Beltran. Everybody's worried about sending Zach Wheeler out for Carlos Beltran again because Beltran was injured and he really didn't do much. And now Zach Wheeler is shoving for the Phillies in his prime.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes you have to take that swing. That particular year, the Giants had one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. They needed more bats. This time around, they've got the bats. They need more pitching. So, you know, but that's the one trade. I don't know. Bryant, for some reason, the more I'm thinking about it, it just makes sense to me. I mean, he's Kiki Hernandez, but like on steroids, you know? it's really like he's the kind of guy that would be absolutely salivating. No, I agree. I don't think I'm with you, Doug. I don't think many guys are untouchable. I think Farhan is willing to make the moves, make the bold moves. I'm trying to remember what this trade was he made a few years ago with the Dodgers at the deadline. Was it the Yu Darvish package? Maybe it was another one. But he has never been afraid to grab the big name, you know, even though he does make all these other under the radar. So it really wouldn't shock me if the Giants do it. I mean, go for it. You talk about depth. If you lose one or two pieces of that depth, how much are you actually losing? You still have a ton of outfielders right now in the minor leagues between so many different Ramos, Canary, all these guys. You have so much outfield depth. It's okay to Machado. Thank you, Doug. That's the trade that's been killing me. Machado was the big trade that Farhan made that one year, and Machado performed for the Dodgers. He performed for them in the playoffs as well. It wasn't like the trade didn't work out. So he was a rental, though, that went on to San Diego. So you do risk that. So, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked, though. I would not be shocked if somebody like that were to come to the Giants. If a trade with the Cubs happens, it would not shock me one bit.
Yeah, the one thing that you brought up absolutely is that Joey Bart is definitely not a Farhan guy. He didn't draft him. And Farhan has proven his track record for not only identifying players, either be it prospects or, you know, journeymen, right, that he knows will fit well in their system. And he's done so much with, you know, the likes of Justin Turner's and what have you. Look what he's done now with Wade. And I know it's short term, but he's also good at giving up guys that don't necessarily perform well for those other teams. And the trades seem to be somewhat lopsided. And you just mentioned Sean Anderson. There's been others that I could go down the list with. And so, yeah, I absolutely could see something where, you know, Derek Rodriguez, I guess he was let go, wasn't he? He was traded, right?
No, he was traded to the Twins.
The Twins, and then he was released, and then the Tigers, and now he's like,
The Tigers. Yeah, but the Twins, that's why I'm saying. The Twins don't want to answer the phone.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where, you know, Joey Bart is obviously shown flashes down in AAA. He's sitting over 300, but he's got a lot of big holes in his swing, a lot of strikeouts, those kinds of things. It could be that his metrics and algorithm and his forecasting ability puts Bart at a mediocre catcher in the major league level. And maybe he is willing to trade him because he didn't draft him. And, you know, I think a lot of Giants fans would be like, what the hell are you doing for a rental trading away our future catcher? But as you noted, and we all know, they drafted catcher after catcher after catcher these last few years. So they're rich with catching talent right now. It doesn't have to be a Joey Bart who is so highly rated. So, yeah, I mean, if they could get Chris Bryant for, you know, a song, that'd be great. But you got to go on now then, you know, and but maybe, you know, guys like Bart and others aren't crucial to their future success as far as Farhan and his crew can tell. So I wouldn't be surprised. Fair, I don't know what like Cubs, that. I don't expect it. Yeah.
I don't know what the Cubs need. So, you know what I mean? They might not even match up as trade partners in the first place. So, you know, it's just total speculation on my part, but like connecting those dots, maybe it's a little wish casting.
Yeah, very much so. All right. So we got some transactions and injuries. We got a bit of a list here. We don't have to go through everything, but we got Kevin Gausman, of course, was reinstated. Crawford was the big one this week. We didn't even mention him earlier. But again, how much did we miss him? Like, he's been incredible for the Giants this year. Right. I'm not saying we didn't miss him because maybe he would have hit one of, you know, a home run in St. Louis that would have won a game, whatever, or something against Pittsburgh that would have won a game. But he's on the 10-day IL. He should be coming off pretty soon. Bargar was sent down to the minors. So was Trump. Posey, of course, came off the injured list, and right away, his first at bat, he had a home run. Vosser was called up. We talked about him and his crucial walk and hustling to second on that play against the Dodgers in the ninth. Maranta was actually sent to the minors for rehab, so that's a good sign. This guy just seems to be getting close, and then he'll just fall off and be on the injured list for quite some time. They signed a couple of guys to minor league contracts, and then Sam Long and Jalen Davis were sent to the minors for rehab.
One other note, Drew Robinson, the leaguer who attempted suicide, came back. He played with one eye, hit a home run here in Vegas where he's from. He decided to retire, and he played his last game this past weekend for the Sacramento River Cats. So he's now going to work in the Giants organization, I guess, to promote mental health and stuff like that. So he's going to find a niche with the Giants. So, you know, hats off to him. Good for him. Congratulations.
Yeah. So Tim Flannery was spotted in the dugout in L.A., and he was holding shop with Crawford and Posey and the likes. Some great pictures there. But I saw that Ron Wotus was wearing one of those T-shirts related to Drew Robinson and mental health. So it's very well aware in the Giants organization. He's made a lot of talks and speeches, not just to the Giants and their staff, but also the other minor leaguers. So it sounds like, he's going to hold that position in the Giants. And, you know, look, mental health is a really big, important thing, as we all know, especially, you know, we all think we're weird and different because we have our own stresses, anxieties, and fears and demons that we're dealing with. But everybody's dealing with them to some certain extent, and it's about recognizing them and dealing with them in the best way possible. So it's good that he's going to be moving on there. Matt notes and talks about Kipe, who came into the booth and announced with Kruko the other day. That was fantastic. I was listening. I didn't see that live, but I saw the highlights there, and that was a really emotional reunion between the two. He definitely looks a little tired and emotional, but called a heck of a game, and it's great to see Kipe back in some capacity. So hopefully, you know, he's on his way to remission. Again, we still don't know the exact, you know, cancer, or if it is cancer that he has, but, you know, he's hopefully on the road to recovery. So that was really good to see. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, that was a highlight of the weekend. I love Kipe. Kipe reminds me of my dad. He's just, they have very similar voices, very similar deliveries, very similar ways of telling stories and things like that. So it's always comforting just to have him back and be like, all right. You know, nothing against John and Dave, but they did a great job. No. Honestly, they did. I really liked how they just started alternating games. Like one game, John would do six innings. The next game, Dave would do six of the nine innings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I liked how they did that, but Kruko was the most excited out of anybody. You know, he got his buddy back, so it was good to see that. I love that little video that was going around.
Yeah, it's funny. In my all the times I've covered games at Oracle, I've really only had one interaction with Kipe, and that was kind of a random one. It was two seasons. I think it was the 2019 season, and I was in the bowels of the stadium, walking from one point to the other. It was down near some of the restaurants. In the back alleys and stuff, and Kipe was walking down, and he had a bottle of Orangina juice, right? That orange juice or whatever. And I was walking towards him, and something happened. He was carrying his laptop and bags and everything else, and he dropped his Orangina, and it shattered all over the ground. And I looked around, and there's like a bunch of Giants employees, and they're all like looking around, and they're like, oh, and they all just kind of started walking, like, you know, everyone pauses for a second, registers what happened, and then everyone continues to move on. And here's poor Dwayne Kuiper, and he's like, So he's getting on his knees and he's starting to pick up all the pieces of glass. And so I felt so bad for him. I was like 10 feet away at that point. So I just walked up and I was like, oh, here, let me help you. And he's, oh, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. And we had a very short chat about, you know, the upcoming game. It was like, you know, 30 seconds or less. But, you know, he thanked me for helping him out. I was just shocked that none of the other Giants employees were like, oh, let me get a broom or something. It was just
maybe
like,
that's something Kipe does every day. It's his good luck ritual. And you didn't even know that.
Yeah, it was very nice. But yeah, I was kind of like, why isn't helping this guy? You know, he's like 60 something, almost 70, I guess, at the time, right? You know, yeah. Bending down, trying to get glass. But all right, you want to cover who's hot?
Yeah, I threw a few names out there since the All-Star break. We've talked about him a ton today. Wade Jr. is 10 for 31, which is a .323 batting average. But his OPS is 1.350 because out of the 10 hits, he has 9 extra base hits, 5 home runs, 3 doubles, 1 triple, which is just kind of ridiculous. And the only single that he has is the one off Jansen to win the freaking game. So, I mean, talk about having a good stretch of 10 days. Wade Jr., it's up there with some of the hottest stretches we've seen from a Giant. Tyro Estrada, absolute capable fill-in. He, poor guy, has made Mauricio Dubon an afterthought. Estrada was also 10 for 31 since the break, and he's been playing every day since Crawford went down, as you mentioned. He's his exact same batting average as Wade at .323, but he's got 2 homers and 5 ribbies. And he works a really, really good count. And he is definitely a guy who is willing to go with a pitch. He'll yank one down the line, but he'll also shoot a base hit to the right side if the pitch is on the outer half of the plate. I've just been absolutely impressed with what I've seen from Estrada so far. Just overall in general, he's just been really a nice surprise. And I think if he continues, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, if he keeps this up, yeah. Dubon's going to have a hard time, you know.
He might become tradable. Dubon might be expendable now suddenly. Yeah. You know, the Cubs, they might like the super utility role since they're getting rid of Chris Bryant. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
And then I want to highlight Wilmer has got 3 home runs because he went through some tough stretches, and he really does seem locked in. One of those home runs we've already talked about was that bomb in L.A. to win that game off of Jansen, which was just – I mean, he deserves to be in the Who's Hot section just for that at-bat. Cutter, it's like I think only 11 times somebody's hit a home run off of Kenley Jansen's cutter or some crazy stat like that. And it showed in the strike zone. Flores's was the highest one. So just to be sitting on a pitch and attack it like that. So Flores with his 3 homers since the break is pretty good.
That
and
was then you such a high pitch.
It was like, I mean, it's so hard to catch up to a high fastball in the first place, you know? So it's so impressive to be able to do what he did. I mean, you know, they talk about when
Eric froze on TortureCast Live once again. They're having storms down in Las Vegas, so that kind of explains some of the internet issues he's been having today. We apologize for that. Well, unless he comes back here in 10 seconds, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up episode 232 of the TortureCast. You can join us every Monday or so. We should be back on the air next Monday around noon Pacific. Oh, there he is. I was just going to go ahead and wrap up because, yeah, your internet issues. But you can follow us collectively at TortureCast on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. You can find us there. We'll also stream this live every Monday or so. And then, of course, we have our podcast, audio podcast, which you can find on all of your favorite platforms. You can follow me at ChadK21. Eric, you can find him on Twitter at 2@hits2. And hopefully Willie will be back next week. You can follow him at Willie Dills. And Eric's got another statement here. What's up?
Yeah, I want to promote on if you haven't already joined Giants Chatter on Facebook, go ahead and join Giants Chatter. It's a good group. The admins, smart people on and I say that because I'm an admin. On Friday, we will be doing a live MLB deadline trade deadline stream from 9 a.m. till the trade deadline. So that's at least four and a half hours of live coverage. Every admin,
it's like 1 p.m. or something like that, right?
Yeah, it is. So we'll probably stay on until 1:30 if anything happens, because stuff sometimes breaks. And all 7 admins will be a part of it. It'll be me. It'll be Say Hey Doug, Doug Hayes. It'll be Chris Corbett, Charlie Baldwin, Steven Risotto, Robbie Lewis, and Brooks Knudsen. We will be popping in and out throughout the 4.5 hours, and we're going to have a couple guests. Roger Munter, who you know covers minor league baseballs if you follow him on Twitter and have seen him. He also now does the There Are Giants podcast talking about the minor leagues. So Munter's going to come on for a half hour to an hour and talk to us. And then Jeff Young, who writes for Around the Foghorn, will also come on and join us. So we're going to have all day long, wall-to-wall coverage. Tune in, tune out. You know, don't get work done. If you're dying to know what happens during the trade deadline, we're going to be monitoring everything. So we'll be talking about right away, instant analysis by those of us in the Giants Chatter group. So Friday, 9 a.m., Giants Chatter group on Facebook if you'd like to join in on the fun.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. All right, I might have that on in the background. That's
good. Right. I mean, it's going to be on for hours, you know. And, and we're going to come and go as we please. You just know that's how it goes. We got 7 guys doing the broadcast plus 2 guests. So yeah, we're going to have fun with it. We're gonna play it by ear, see how it goes. I mean, there's only so much structure you can have. So, you know, hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully, the Giants. To me, I keep hoping today is a day they make a trade because this Dodger series coming up is important, and then they've got the Astros coming. And I have really hoped that Farhan wants to kind of win the arms race, in essence, right here. So, I mean, it's possible we get news in the next 24 hours. I'm hoping so. You know, that's my biggest, you know, thing for the upcoming week. I know they got huge, huge series with the Dodgers and the Astros, and I'm really curious to see when Farhan does make a move.
Yeah, for sure. And I am going to try and get my butt up to Oracle to cover a game this week. With my schedule, I was first targeting Friday against the Astros. I may or may not be able to make that, so I might back it up and do a Wednesday night against the Dodgers, which I'd love to see a game against the Dodgers. So we'll see what happens.
I immediately go look at the pitching matchup. You know what I mean? We're like so trained as fans. Disco against Buehler, that's a hell of a matchup.
Yeah, we got Buehler again. He's a tough one, right? I mean, Disco's been fine, but man, Buehler is a tough one. There's no doubt about it. But so, yeah, we'll look for that coverage. If I do that, I'd love to get up there for batting practice. And now, of course, we can go in the dugout if you have COVID vaccination status and talk to them. And, of course, last game that I covered, it was a surprise to see Buster Posey sit down, and we were able to chat with him as well. So that was great.
So you need to go cover a game so a trade breaks. That's exactly what needs to happen.
That's what needs to happen, exactly. It's just my mojo there. So, all right, well, thanks, everyone, for listening to the TortureCast. I already gave all our contact information. But man, we got big series coming up against the Dodgers and then the Astros, but it looks like the Giants are going to hang in there for at least getting a playoff spot. Thanks for joining again. We'll see you next Monday for episode 233. Until then, have a great week.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.